Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Rock and Roll Psychic Radio. My name is Andrew Brewer, the Rock and Roll Psychic. This evening, I decided to do just a spontaneous off-the-cuff show, just me, talking about reincarnation. And if there is such a concept as reincarnation, then there must be some way that whatever it is that reincarnates manages to do that and some vehicle for that reincarnation to take place. So we're going to talk a little bit about theories. Now, as a psychic, if we make a prediction, if I make a prediction or another psychic makes a prediction, a public prediction or a prediction for a client, there's a way to measure that. We say, yes, this happens. No, that doesn't happen. You got it right. You didn't get it right. You're accurate X amount of time. Away we go. So those are things that can be looked at, analyzed, to some degree they can be measured. They can certainly be commented upon as to whether this seems to be valid or not. With reincarnation, it's all speculation. There is no definitive way to say that the things that we think about with reincarnation are true. There is no way to say as a definitive measure, if I say you were so-and-so, how do we know that? If I say you lived here and did this, how do we know that? There's no way to know that. But in theory, and I think in actuality, what we're going to find is that there are certain styles of engagement. So basically, what's reincarnating is an emotional template about how we process information. There's a style. There's a way in which we typically do things, and that's expressed in a lot of different ways. It's expressed in how we react to situations. One of the ways in which we can see karma, if there is such a concept as karma, and I think to some degree there is, although I don't think of it as a karma of retribution, you shot me in the 12th century, I'm going to get you now. I think of it more as it's a template for evolution. But if there is something there's a style that we have in the way in which we react, and part of our evolution is to change the automatic response system that we might normally take to a particular situation. In the 13th century, this really annoyed me, and I would have probably cut your head off, but now I take a deep breath, I think about it, we talk about it, we find a resolution, we're in a happy space, I've evolved. It's taken me 800 years, but I've evolved. That's one of the ways in which we can look at it. Now, another thing that tends to go over and over and over, as not only a style in the ways in which we would process emotions, there are styles in the way in which we would express our inner truth. One of the ways we express our personalities is through our career. So you're going to find common themes in career choices. Early on in this process for me as a clairvoyant, when discussing it with other people, I talked about what I at the initial point called thematic buckets. There are basically, think of them as vocational groups. We have a healer, we have scholar, we have diplomat, we have certain kinds of styles. And so you'll tend to see people that have three or four primary buckets. And so these are mixed and matched in the different incarnations so that there are elements that tend to be consistent, but maybe one is more dominant. I tend to have a very militaristic, if you look at my past lives, again, what I'm seeing is true and what other people are seeing is true, it tends to be a very male energy, a very much, I got a sword and a horse and away we go. At the same time, there is a very strong female energy to me as well. So there's this duality. And as a career or army officer, as a karmic vocation, that female energy is actually an asset. So what's reincarnating is a template for how we express our emotions. And one of the ways in which we express our emotions is through preferences, and those preferences can be delineated through job choice, through career. It can also be expressed, it can also be expressed through a physical style. So what happens is that we often will see past lives, when we do matching of past lives, the most dramatic ones, of course, are the ones that look alike. So how is this possible? So if there is a style in which we are choosing to express ourselves, there is also a physical component to that. So if we have an imprint, a physical imprint in our mind, then we're going to gravitate towards creating conditions within our physical body that most closely align with that particular image we hold dear in our head. So the thing that's reincarnating is this emotional template. Again, it's expressed through vocational choices. It's expressed through physical expressions. It's expressed through certain types of skills. We see certain people who are good communicators, certain people who are physically adept, certain people have musical ability or whatever. There's certain core components to that particular person that tend to go over and over and over. Musicians are a very unique group. And so when you look at really high-end musical talents, they tend to be, for whatever reason, happy about being musicians. And musicians tend to stay musicians perhaps more than any other vocational group that I've seen. And so you will also then find when people are looking at evolving, they may choose different styles in which to do that. So if we look at the typical person is not going to bring on a lot of variance. They're going to try to slow and steady, let the pot boil just a little bit, not make it burn the house down. They're looking at slow incremental growth. This is the most typical pattern in which we're going to see. You know, most people don't have tremendous, changes within their lives. On the other end of the spectrum, and I would be on that end, you find people that have very dramatic changes that go through different iterations of who they are, change their vocation, change their location, change their relationships, change their hairstyle, they do a lot of different things, and they will have a very up and down kind of energy. These are people, in some sense, who are trying to hurry things along. They are trying to create opportunities for growth, even if they do that through what may appear to be destructive means. Ideally, once one evolves to a certain level, that destructive pattern will cease, and you will then see that serenity, a calmness, a kind of a smooth sailing is going to be the optimal way to go. But not everybody gets to that point. And so there is an evolutionary process. So if there is such a thing as reincarnation, and the vehicle for reincarnation is to have a sequence of physical bodies, something has to inhabit those physical bodies, and it has to do several things, right? One, it has to find a way to get from wherever it starts to wherever it's going to land. Two, it has to be stored someplace between lifetimes, right? You would think. Three, there has to be a point of origin. For something to reincarnate, it needs to have an origination point. Now, I wrote a book a few years back called Cases with Anomalous Dates. The title Cases with Anomalous Dates is taken from a statement made by a man by the name of Ian Stevenson, Dr. Ian Stevenson. And Dr. Stevenson was head of the psychiatry department at the University of Virginia. And back in the 50s and 60s, the gentleman who created the Xerox machines and was the brains behind the Xerox Corporation went to different different colleges in the United States with the hopes that someone would study in an academic fashion, that would study the concept of reincarnation. If someone would do that, he would endow that particular department. The University of Virginia took on that role, and Dr. Stevenson took on the directorship of that. And so what he did was he went looking for people who had memories of previous existences, and the vehicle that he chose was to look at children. And so Dr. Stevenson went, and most of the stories that he found, most of the children who were talking about previous incarnations, were in cultures in which that was an accepted mode of transmission. And we see a lot of these in India or different things in Asia. And so Dr. Stevenson found that on occasion, a child would talk about a prior existence. Let's say that they had died in 1950, but the child was actually born in 1949. Well, they overlap. And so Dr. Stevenson's term for this was cases with anomalous dates. The dates don't seem to go together. He proposed several ideas for how this might take place. One of them was possession. But I work under the assumption, for a lot of reasons, that this is a process that actually takes place. So not only do we have the idea that in reincarnation there are a succession of lifetimes in which an organizing principle, what I call the soul essence, inhabits these physical bodies one after the other. It's also possible, and in my belief true, that there are individuals who, for whatever reason, choose to incarnate in multiple bodies in the same chronological time period. So you may find someone who has two or three or four lifetimes all in 1910. And so what they're doing is they're trying to absorb as much experience as possible. They are trying to give themselves as many opportunities for growth as possible. And so they are choosing this way of engaging. It's no wackier, if we look at quantum physics or a lot of other ways of looking at it, it's no wackier to live twice in 1910 or four times in 1910 than it is to live in 1910 and be reincarnated in 1955. Or really, it's no wackier than just showing up, period. So, if there is something that reincarnates, and the thing that reincarnates is, in some sense, an emotional template, then we also have to look at how is it transmitted. Again, we have to look at theoretical constructs. When we look at human DNA, some people talk about junk DNA. Basically, strands of DNA that no one knows what they're for. Well, just because we don't have a way of defining and expressing what those particular variables stand for doesn't mean that they're junk. It just means that our ability to interpret them is not sufficient to make sense of them yet. I mean, it wasn't until the 1950s you know, in a laboratory in Cambridge, England, that we even began to talk about DNA. So the idea of DNA is really only about 65 years old. My belief is that this junk DNA is encoded with past life energy, which is one of the ways in which it takes on a physical form. And we're going to talk about the mechanics of how that might be possible. But if the DNA itself is reflective of past life information, just like the genetics go back to your mother and your father and your grandparents and your great-grandparents and recessive genes and why you've got red hair and everybody else has got brown, that information is being transferred from one point to another. And the encoding, in my belief, in my opinion, again, this is an opinion, as when we talk about reincarnation, it's all speculation. There is no definitive answer. But I believe that the DNA itself is one of the means of transmission. Now, if that's true, then that suggests, to me it suggests, that there is an organizing principle behind this, and an organizing principle oftentimes will have someone doing the organizing. Now we get into questions of God, we get into questions of spiritual truth, we get into questions of purpose. Are we just random molecules that bounce into each other, or is there an organizing spiritual universe with some sort of spiritual hierarchy that is creating this vehicle, is allowing it to be recycled for some particular purpose? My opinion is that there most assuredly is a spiritual hierarchy to this, what we would call God. It may be multiple gods. We may, the pantheon of the gods of the Greeks or the Romans or the Nordics. I mean, there can be lots of ways in which we express our spiritual truth. But at a minimum, again, in my theory, there is a divine organizing principle that has created, however they did it, I'm not smart enough to tell you, but in trying to reverse engineer this, created the transmission protocol to help this spiritual essence get from point A to point B to point C and on and on and on. All right. If the overriding structure, I realize it's kind of a wacky way to explain it, but I'm trying to explain it in the best way I know how. If the overarching, overriding structure is one of continuity, and the DNA is a continual presence that expresses that continuity, we can see migratory patterns through DNA that go back, you know, tens of thousands of years. If all that's true, then there is a style that is unique to each person that is a reflection of their point of origin. So let's think about what that means. Excuse me. If we start off as a little, you know, tadpole or whatever we start off as a little swimming sperm throughout the, you know, throughout the universe, within that inception point, there is a potential, a seed that will unfold into something else. when I did a radio show last night, I talked about the karmic interrelationships between President Donald Trump, ex-FBI Director James Comey, and former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, and how they are all commingled, and the ways in which I was able to define that was through astrology. So if there is an organizing principle, one of the ways that it is expressed is also through an astrological signature. So this gets into very complicated, like who's creating this, right? But astrology is also a potential seedbed of information. So when we look at an astrology chart, and we can look at karmic patterns in astrology, when we look at astrology as an evolutionary blueprint, we're looking at a certain style, much like what I said with, you know, what is it is reincarnating, this style. Astrology, the natal chart of an individual, talks about this potential style. It also has, within the construct of the astrology chart, it has a timing mechanism. So a seed grows, it takes a while, and then it gets bigger, and it gets bigger, and then before long, the tree is 50 feet tall. Right? It's that potential is there and unfolds in a certain way and a certain time frame. So with astrology, we can see within the spatial harmonics of an astrology chart, within the spatial relationships between various planets, we can transfer that spatial relationship into a time element. So we can see a harmonic evolutionary process inherent in the astrology chart based on the spatial dynamics between planets. So I'll give you an example. If your moon is 26 degrees away from your Venus, we're going to build a case that when you're 26 years old, the spatial relationship 26 degrees, we're going to move that into 26 years. When you're 26 years old, you're going to have an external event of a significant nature that's going to clarify in the outside world the internal realization of your moon Venus. And based on where the moon is, and based on where Venus is, and based on any other aspects to each of those planets, we can build a case as to what that's likely to look like, as well as what that external event is likely to do to the ongoing evolution of the individual. And this is just created boom, boom, boom all around the chart. So just like we know that you're going to have baby teeth and your permanent teeth, and you know, you're going to have puberty, and all these things are going to happen at certain fairly closely defined points along the way through biology, through genetics. We can also see this at work in astrology. Astrology talks about potency. It talks about potential, and reincarnation is about potential waiting to be realized. So there's a harmonic between astrology and the DNA. They are each expressions of potential. They are each expressions of a style. They are each expressions of a chronological unfoldment of that potential. Again, I hope this is making sense. Excuse me, I'm going to take a quick drink here. Okay. So, on top of the idea that each of us unfolds, evolves in a certain way because of things within us, we also evolve as a result of interacting with things outside of us. Floods, war, trains late, we react to external events. But the most important agent, external agent that we have to react to are other people. And so our evolution is most broadly defined by the ways in which we relate to and understand our interactions with other people. There is no coming to consciousness without pain. That's Carl Jung. And to me, there is no coming to consciousness without coming to some understanding of how we feel about other people. We need people. They need us. There is a spiritual interconnectedness between us and other people, just as really there is a spiritual interconnectedness with all elements of the universe. We need the tree. The tree needs us. We need the water. The water needs us. I mean, there's an interlocking harmony to it all. So, if we are coming and we are over and over and over, and we are being given multiple opportunities to evolve based on perhaps similar types of situations, certainly energetically, thematically, similarities, it would make sense then theoretically that we are likely to interact with similar types of people. Taking that one step further, it's quite likely that these similar types of people also have a defining mechanism, which is that they're the same people reincarnating right alongside of us, which puts us into the idea of soul groups. And again, forgive me, I've been fighting off kind of a head cold. Dude, what the heck is a soul group, and why do we need it, and how can that possibly work? All right. So just as there is an organizing principle that gets us from the 12th century to the 13th century and on and on and on, there's also a concurrent organizing principle, really an expression of the same organizing principle, an expression of the same divinity, that aligns us with our helpers. And those helpers can be helpers because they love us and support us, or they can be helpers because they don't like us at all and they challenge us. But in either case, they are catalysts to growth. So the people with whom we have the most intense reactions, good or bad, these are your soulmates. A soulmate in the Andyland universe is not Fabio with his hair in the wind. A soulmate is someone who changes your life because of your interaction with that particular person. You make a decision to do something different, or you understand yourself or life in general or people in a different way as a result of your interaction with them. I used to trust people, but now I don't trust anybody because of Bob. Okay, Bob's a soulmate. I was going to go to college, but I met Sally in the bus station on the way to college, and we ran off and, you know, lived in a commune. Okay, well, Sally's a soulmate. If, you know, you live with Sally for a month, Sally's a soulmate because she changed your course and you didn't go to Harvard, and that's how that rolls. So we have these people who intersect our lives in such a way that we are forced to engage with them. Now, we're not forced to be changed by them. That's a choice. But not all choices are conscious choices. And so another element of reincarnation and a divine organizing principle leads us to this question, which is it free will or is it fate? Do I have total free will to pick and choose what I'm going to do? Am I the absolute master of my universe, the captain of my ship, or am I simply being tossed willy-nilly throughout life with no control whatsoever? Well, in my opinion, we're somewhere in the middle. But as a psychic who has made hundreds and hundreds of predictions for things that people told me was impossible and that wouldn't happen just the way I said they would, it leads me to suspect that something's causing that to happen long before it happens. And again, it could be an outgrowth of a series of choices that lead to an inevitable reaction. But I'm inclined to say that if your evolution, if your life purpose, if your life plan, if your blueprint has a trip to Topeka and you only want to live on the East Coast, I hate it for you, somewhere or another, you're going to end up taking the bus to Topeka. Now, you may not like it. You may leave, but you had to go see it. You had to have some Topeka experience. How's that for a metaphor? And I just made that up. Okay, which just shows how bizarre my sense of humor really is. When we look at astrology, and astrology is an incredible tool for understanding a lot of things. But not only does it help us understand past life patterns, help us understand evolutionary cycles within our current life, it also helps us understand the dynamics of a relationship with a particular person. And the way in which that's done is through a concept in astrology called synastry. Synastry is basically how do you and I match each other. Okay, I'm an Aquarius, you're a Virgo. Okay, that's the simplistic way to say it. I'm an Aquarius, you're a Scorpio, we should clash or whatever. That's a very simplistic way to see it. Because the sun signs may be important, they may be not as important. And so we have to look at the totality of the chart. And we also have to look at the ways in which the various components of the chart, all the planets and some of the major asteroids, as well as things like the moon nodes, the vertex, the angles of the chart, the rising sign, the midheaven, we have to look at all those different components. And every planet has a specific location. And again, I'm sorry, I'm fighting off this head cold. Every planet has a specific location, has like a zip code, it has a street address. So in my case, I have a rising sign of 18 Gemini. 18 Gemini is my ascendant. My sun is 17 degrees Aquarius. My moon is 13 degrees Leo. Everything has a specific location. Okay, I got a Leo moon, but above and beyond that, my moon in Leo is at 13 degrees. You've got a Leo moon, but your Leo moon is in 22 degrees. They're not in the same harmonic that they would be if your Leo moon was 13 or 14 degrees. So it's that intensity, it's the mathematical relationships and the intensity of those relationships as a harmonic function of the degree measures. I got a planet at 25 degrees on one sign, you got a planet at 25 degrees on another sign. We want to look at that because the 25 is what trips off the train here. The 25 is the key, and then we go from there. So I hope that makes sense. So when you're looking at these interrelationships, astrological interrelationships, you're looking for an intensity level, and that intensity level is best served by exact, like triangles or squares or whatever. The closer it is to exact, the more intense. So when I do astrology, for those of you who are astrologers, you'll hear people talk about orbs. Lots of times orbs are little, you know, dots in the sky when you take a picture, and that's a ghost of Aunt Sally. But when I'm talking about orbs, I'm talking about the extension of the degree width that you accept as being legitimate for a particular aspect to be significant. I have very tight orbs. I don't go, you know, if something's 9 degrees apart, no, it's not related to me. They have to be very, very tight. And so we see these tight inner aspects between what we would consider important people in your life, and we can also chart the evolutionary process of a relationship, and we can get a pretty good idea, is this person important or not? You know, not always. Sometimes there's potential and doesn't manifest, but we can tell pretty quickly if something, there's no potential. This is good for dating, it's also good for a lot of things. But so getting back to the idea of a soulmate, we are likely to recognize our soulmates if we can't recognize them any other way through astrology. Astrology tells us things. Okay. So, the thing that reincarnates is the style. The way it is expressed is through emotions, through skills, through preferences, things that we like, through the things we like to do for our careers, and what we look like. Okay? Those are things that actually reincarnate, and the way in which it is captured is through both the DNA and through the astrology. And so there has to be a pretty elaborate schema behind the scenes that links you into the right time and the right place and the right physical body. So, you have a certain kind of energy. You say, hey, I was this, I want to come back, I think it's time. Well, now we got to shop. We got to go shopping around, and we go, okay, you have this kind of energy, you have this kind of energy, we need to find an astrology chart, and we need to find people that could get pregnant and have you. We need to find all these people, and they need to be people that we've had relationships in the past, and so we need to find them, we need to motivate them, we got to get them in the mood. Well, the sperm and the eggs got to get together, they got to do a little, you know, dance. Got to have the astrology that matches who you are, and their genetics has to be in alignment with the physicality that would support your expression of your own sense of physicality and your own inclinations towards expression of personality and vocation. This is kind of, okay? But it happens. But one of the things that happens when we look at astrology, I can't go with a giant rope and, you know, Pluto is just messing the whole, it's just messing things up. That Pluto needs to go over there or I'm going to have a challenge. That Pluto, I don't like it there. Andrew, I hate to express this to you, but let me try to put it in a way that is easy to understand. Pluto cannot be pulled on a giant string and throw off the entire elliptical orbit because you don't like it over there. That's where Pluto happens to be parked, and so I hate it for you, but that's where Pluto is. I don't like Pluto there. Well, you can wait, you know, 100 years until Pluto moves over there, or you can hang with the fact that that's where Pluto is right now. And based on it and its relationship to these other planets, it's likely to do X to you. Deal. Okay? So astrology becomes both an evolutionary blueprint for advancement as well as it becomes a limitation. We cannot change where the planets are. We can pick kind of the way we want the chart to look within what's available. but we cannot move all these planets around to fit us. I'd like all these conjunct here. That's great, but it doesn't work that way. All right. So what's reincarnating is this desire. People come back. Here's where, again, forgive me, I'm going to grab something to drink. We got about 15 minutes left. I know this is probably the weirdest thing you've ever heard, but that's the beauty of it. Why the heck would anybody even want to come back, right? I don't know how many times I've heard, well, this is my last lifetime. And I just nod my head and go, well, perhaps, perhaps not. My belief is, and again, when we're talking about reincarnation, we're talking about belief. Hopefully it's an educated belief. You know, I'm whatever it is I'm supposed to be in terms of, you know, psychic powers. But still belief, still theory. I believe that everyone reincarnates. I believe that everyone has reincarnated, some a lot more than others, and that's another, you know, topic for another time. But I don't think you just go, I'm over it, I'm done. Because I think people like to come here. I think they enjoy it. And they may not enjoy every piece of it, but I think they like it. And I think the reason they come is for love. To me, the organizing, defining, the thing that people want most is to find love. And so they'll come and sniff around and do whatever in order to recreate conditions in which they have love in their lives. And usually they come back with the idea that they're looking for someone that they loved before. We don't always find them because it may not be part of our, it may not be what's best for us in the long term to have that. We may choose to be and have an ascetic life or you know, an isolated life for some reason because it gives us a frame of reference that we can use to be more loving the next round. These all kind of go together. You can't, again, it's easier to say than to really accept, I guess, but you can't look at one lifetime, even though it's the one we're in, as a defining, you know, it for how it has to be. This is just a piece of a much bigger puzzle. And I tend to think that lifetimes work in clusters. So in English, what does that mean? Or in Andy English, what does that mean? So if I had a lifetime in which I was kind of a badass, you know, or it wasn't very nice, and I go, you know, that's probably not a really polite way to operate. I should really consider being friendlier and not just being a total, you know, hard ass. Okay, so I had the experience of being kind of whatever, warrior, and now I go, that is limiting. I want to move beyond that. I want to move into a space of more love and more acceptance and more tolerance. And one of the reasons I know I want to do that is because I have a recollection, I have a karmic resonance related to this other lifetime in which that was not how I operated for the most part. So in using this first lifetime is basically a template, is a don't do this again. But if it serves as a don't do this again, it actually is doing something constructive because it is influencing the way in which you process emotions today. This is very important. Your lifetime in 1910 is echoing in 2017. And the way in which you respond to the echo not only changes the choices and the ways in which you interpret your life in 2017, it also gives justification healing in reverse to 1910. So if your experience in 1910, as dysfunctional as it may have been in 1910, is a healthy role model for you as to what not to do, if nothing else, and you don't do that, you evolve, you take a different kind of automatic response to a particular situation that's reminiscent of what you were in 1910, then you have learned from this experience and you have healed the 1910 experience because it is conjoined. Okay? It's conjoined. And that conjunction of energetic signatures means that we are changing the vibratory patterns of all these lifetimes based on the ways in which we process in the moment. If we look at quantum physics, we see, that's interesting, I said that, and my other computer simply just turned on out of nowhere. That's fascinating. I don't know why I did that. That's really weird. Okay. No. Parallel life, right? That's pretty cool. So, quantum physics, this really is pretty cool. Quantum physics suggests that a property can exhibit behavior that's suggestive of it being in two places at the same time, yet it's a singular entity. Just like my Chromebook and my laptop, I'm on the Chromebook, but the laptop, while I'm getting ready to tell you this thing about two things being able to do this at the same time, it suddenly, spontaneously turns on and turns back off. And that's pretty weird. Okay. So, this in quantum physics is more whack than anything I can even come up with. And no matter how bizarre this entire narrative has been, quantum physics is even wackier. But they sort of speak to one another. So what I'm suggesting is that our evolution sends out thought waves, a harmonic wave pattern, to the thought wave that is the basically echo of these other lifetimes. And we are healing ourselves collectively, and we are healing the energy of that particular life because it served a positive purpose. It was a blueprint for us to evolve. I don't think this is true. Reincarnation has been the defining piece of my life since I was 20 years old. I'm 62. It has changed my life. I said early on that I would give up anything to understand it, not recognizing what a ridiculous thing that was to say, but that's kind of what I've done. As I've given up a lot of opportunities because I was focused, driven, obsessed with trying to understand it, and still trying to understand it. So again, these are theories. These are my 40 plus years of studying it. This is what I've come up with so far. I could change it tomorrow. But a lot of these ideas have changed over time, but they're fairly consistent. I tend to express them in similar ways all the time now. I'm consistent in the ways in which I look at it now. Love is what matters. It's why we come. It is who we are. And the reason that I initially started to study reincarnation was because I was having kind of like deja vu sort of stuff. But I also wanted to know what happened. If I died, what does that mean? You know, I mean, I was born into a Southern family, has a very kind of religious kind of energy to that. I didn't, you know, is that true, what y'all are saying? even just thinking about it, my southern accent comes back. Is that true, what you're saying? I want to find out. I want to know. I want to have a direct experience so that I can make a conscious choice, because what's going to happen after death should impact the types of choices you make while you're alive. You know, are you really, do you really have a list? You really check it twice? Am I going to go to heaven? Am I going to go to hell? Is that true? Well, if it is, then I need to kind of get with the program and figure out what that means and make certain choices. If that's not true, what does that tell me? What, how does that perception of what comes after the undiscovered country moves born, a traveler returns, puzzles will and makes us rather bear those ills we have and fly to others we know not of. Thank you, Hamlet. How does that understanding, theory, belief about life after death impact the types of choices we make today? And I was driven to figure it out. And I'm still trying to figure it out. Okay? But love is what keeps going and going and going. We come to express and feel love. But when we look at death, and we're talking about reincarnation, death would seem, in our particular model, as a price tag to pay to get from one body to the next. Well, yeah, I'd really like to reincarnate again, but I'm not too keen on dying. Oh, well, I hate it for you, but that's sort of how it works. So, what's death? Kind of an important philosophical question, kind of an important logistical question. It's an important question. What's death? What dies? What lives on? What was there to begin with? Those are all important philosophical questions that inform the ways in which we make choices to live today. I have said, and I'm about to say it again, that we have one foot in life and one foot in death right now. That everything is holographic. So as a medium, if I talk to Aunt Petunia, and Aunt Petunia is already reincarnated and lives in, you know, San Diego, if I talk to the soul essence of Aunt Petunia when she was Aunt Petunia, then I'm picking up on a holographic representation of that particular energy signature. That's what I'm connecting with. And so the Aunt Petunia energy is still there in a holographic way. So basically, we are holograms. We are the Wizard of Oz. You know, we're a big holographic thing. You know, you slice us, we're still, I really do think a hologram is an actual fairly sophisticated model as to what really is going on. But if we have one foot in life and one foot in death, then we don't really have the pain of death. We don't really cease to exist. We simply shift our consciousness. So if the one foot in death, according to my model, is that we have one foot in this physical reality that we call Earth, and we have one foot in this spiritual world that permeates it. There's a spiritual world that's bigger than what we see. You know, I see things other people don't see, and I don't think it's because I'm crazy, because I describe things and then later find out that those things I described either happened or were at the places where I described them, even though I wasn't standing right in front of them. That would suggest that there's something going on. It doesn't prove it, but it suggests it's possible. So if death is simply a transition in consciousness, and we are still holographically, all interconnected as one giant soul essence that chooses to express itself through various physical incarnations and sets of experiences within those incarnations, then death's not something to be feared. And if death's not something to be feared, it allows us to live in a way in which we can truly express our truth. And if our truth is about love, then living in love is really expression of our highest potential. One final thing, because I've got 4 minutes and 44 seconds before this ends. Just as we look at synastry, astrological synastry between you and your husband or wife, or you and your children, or you and your boyfriend or your girlfriend, or you know, whoever your important person is in your life, your mentor, your tormentor, whoever that might be, we would also expect an equally valid, strong, significant astrological synastry between each successive or concurrent lifetime. When I do astrological matching, the final key is astrology. And it's like the Ouroboros, the snake that eats his tail. In a lot of ways, astrology is my entry point, but it's my final exit point as well. I can find someone that looks exactly like me, like we're twins. That person can have every story element that I believed in and looked for. But if the astrology doesn't match, they got to go. There should be, just as there is a genetic DNA component that is consistent through the thing that reincarnates, there is also an astrological harmony that we would see as very tight intra-aspects between each lifetime. They should be tight, 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 super tight. So, I appreciate any of you who have hung in there with me, for hanging in there with me. Once again, my name is Andrew Brewer, the Rock and Roll Psyche. My website is andrew-brewer.com. And you can find me on Facebook at, my name is Andrew Bassano Brewer, and then Bassano, well, Andrew is a made-up name anyway, too. That's his own story. But I had to have a middle name when I was a professional actor, because there's already an Andrew Brewer that was a registered actor, and so Bassano is a family name. So Andrew Bassano Brewer is how you might find me on Facebook, and that's where all the action is in my life, really, is in Facebook. So everybody have a happy week, a happy day, a happy life. Once again, my name is Andrew Brewer, AndrewBrewer.com. Reincarnation, man, it's a crazy world, but I think it explains everything. To me, reincarnation is a beginning and end. There is, in my opinion, there's a divine spark within each of us. We come because we want to be here. And I think it's a good thing that we're here. So, what more can I say? God is good, life is good, unicorn love, it's a magical thing. If you believe in yourself, you can make magical things happen. Reincarnation is about magic, and you need to find that magic. And by studying your past lives, really understanding past life energy, past life processes, you can jumpstart your evolution into a higher level. So past lives really give us clues as to what to do in this life. So, once again, you're listening to Rock and Roll Psychic Radio, and I wish everyone a happy day. We will talk later. Thank you very much.